This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonabacher at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is a teaching from the Pali Canon, The Vicissitudes of Life. The Buddha said, these eight worldly conditions keep the world turning around, and the world turns around these eight worldly conditions. What are these eight? Gain and loss, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. And then the Buddha says that when we don't understand the nature of these worldly conditions, and we come upon gain or loss, we do not reflect this gain that has come to me as impermanent, is bound up with suffering, is subject to change. So with a student who does not understand this, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, pleasure and pain, keep her mind engrossed. When gain comes, she is elated, and when she meets with loss, she is dejected. When fame comes, she is elated, and when she meets with disrepute, she is dejected. When praise comes, she is elated, and when she meets with blame, she is dejected. When she experiences pleasure, she is elated, and when she experiences pain, she is dejected. Being thus involved in likes and dislikes, there is suffering. When a student understands the nature of these worldly conditions, coming upon gain, the student reflects, this gain that has come to me is impermanent. It is bound up with suffering. It is subject to change. With a student like this, she understands all these things as they really are, and they do not engross her mind. Thus, she will not be elated by gain and dejected by loss, elated by fame and dejected by disrepute, elated by praise and dejected by blame, elated by pleasure and dejected by pain. Giving up likes and dislikes, there is no suffering. She is free from suffering. So these eight worldly conditions are a part of the Buddha's diagnosis of the human condition, of our condition. We suffer because of our clinging and aversion. Right? We begin with this fundamental teaching. And this breaks it down a little bit more, makes it a little bit easier to identify in ourselves, easier to feel in our own experience. So if we're honest, if we look closely, we see we are engrossed constantly, tossed to and fro, fearing blame, criticism. I'm desperate for praise, for approval, constantly of scanning for some source of pleasure. Is this going to be it? Is this going to be it? Some source of comfort. And so this very human condition, the Buddha speaking about the experience of his mind, speaking about our mind, your mind, this human mind, the human condition. I've used this passage before in a talk, and this came to mind last month during Sesshin. A sitting monitor, and often during Sesshin, when I'm sitting monitor, there will be a time where I will kind of feel just this swirl of our kind of collective mixing anxiety and need, mine, all of ours. I think I feel it when I feel mine. And there is usually a time when I look out and I see the beauty, the wholeness. Feel that in each one of you, the natural wholeness. Someone said something to me a while back, they very much kind of revealed their feeling of unworthiness, of unwholeness. And I was feeling that and feeling my own experience of that. feeling how that touches everything that we touch. The way we feel about ourselves touches everything that we touch. A while back, I was sitting by myself and just kind of had this vision, really, in me of this kind of pool of insecurity. I hadn't seen this before, and it was kind of, it was depressing. That's how I felt, kind of heavy. And that was just my immediate reaction to what I saw. And then, you know, there was sort of thoughts then that came around that of, oh, that's still there. Like, I've done so much work and it's still there. And also after a while, feeling that it was okay. I'd seen this. Okay. It's there. I wanted to use this teaching on the worldly conditions to look at insecurity a little bit and to look at wholeness. And so these eight worldly conditions, how do we use a teaching like this to see ourselves, to see our own experience, to see our own mind? And so to feel in ourselves, what is the feeling when we receive blame, receive criticism, or fear that it's coming? So just to feel that, to bring awareness to that, what does that feel like? And when you receive praise, what does that feel like? Just to try and see that clearly, what is it in your body, mind? And to see how we crave that, how much we want that. Wait for it, hope for it. Sesshin is a good opportunity to do this, to see really closely, because things are stripped away and it's quiet. But all this is still happening. We're mostly not talking to each other. It's still happening. It makes it easier to see it. It highlights it. And to see how insecure this is, how unstable this condition is. And how much we live there, how much we are engrossed. I think it's hard to see. This is our delusion, so it's hard to see that we're even to see that we are engrossed in this like and dislike, pleasure, pain. How do we see this? The Buddha says these eight worldly conditions keep the world turning around. And the world turns around these eight conditions. The whole world. Our world. And so we can use these conditions to see our own habits, to see our mind. When are we engrossed by one of them? When are we being moved? Last month during Sesshin, I offered a comment that felt very true. It came from what I was feeling. It was felt heartfelt. And then I saw the thoughts that came after it. Oh, people are going to really appreciate that. they're going to thank me on Sunday. Wanting that. And so the Buddha says when we're looking for that praise or power, control, or pleasure, that's suffering, caught. Being involved in likes and dislikes, we suffer. And so, how? We have to see that for ourselves, study that for ourselves. How is this suffering? He says it's because it's not reliable, right? That these are subject to impermanent. They are impermanent and subject to change. Right? And they don't last. They just pass. We can't hang anything on them. They're kind of ephemeral. They're not really there. And what is praise and blame? Gain and loss. Is there gain and loss? You really look, There is no gain and loss. And so to look at that, when you go to buy something, and I don't buy things very often, so I kind of get excited when I'm like have to go buy toiletries at Target, you know, and I can like drive into Kingston. And, you know, there is a little pleasure there, right? You get something. And then it's kind of disappointing. And so again, to feel that, just to notice that, sometimes there's some kind of regret, to notice that, to really feel that, that's suffering. I keep thinking that we're going to get something, and there's nothing to get. You know, the Buddha doesn't, in Buddhism, doesn't deny pleasure. Right? The Buddha speaks quite a bit about pleasure. And also points to the danger. He says, see the danger, look for the danger. So what is the danger? There is pleasure. There are things that bring us pleasure. And what's the danger? And so to feel the expectation, the hope, and to feel what happens. I had sort of a different experience a while back. I was, it was an evening on Hosan, our days off, and I was sort of rummaging through the refrigerator looking for leftovers to put together a meal to take up to our cabin to share with Sean. And there wasn't a whole lot in the fridge, so I was sort of rummaging around. But I found some home fries. The cook's been making some pretty good home fries, so I pulled those out, and those looked pretty good. And so I had a few things out on the counter, and then I went out over to the other side of the kitchen or into the walk-in or something, and I came back and the home fries were gone. And someone said, oh yeah, they took them. And it was interesting because I didn't actually have a reaction. It's like, oh, okay. And so I was just noticing that. I didn't get angry. But I had been a little excited to have found those home fries. And they were going to be good, and Sean was going to appreciate them, thank me. And they were gone. And so all of this, in just a couple of minutes, if that, right, it's all so fleeting. And that's our life, right? It was like, it was all right there. And I was interested, like, how did this happen? You know, there were other people involved. It's all right there. And so looking at the way that this like and dislike causes us suffering, and then to look at how this is not just from the outside, right? We don't need much help, most of us, certainly with the praise and the blame, the criticism. We do this pretty well on our own, a lot of us, most of us. Shugen Roshi talks about this as the tyranny of the mind. And so, just all by ourselves in our own mind, how our sense of ourselves, our feeling about ourselves, is tied to these likes and dislikes, to these worldly conditions. I feel good about myself when I do something well and I get some praise, and then it all kind of crashes down when things don't go as well. Or I get blamed for something, or I screw up, make a mistake. And it takes some courage to see this in ourselves, to see it closely, to see it clearly. The Buddha said, when we know the nature of these things, we won't be engrossed. That's why we need to look at them closely, directly, so that we know their nature, can see their true nature, and not be so engrossed. So what happens when we put down like and dislike? When we put down gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, when they don't pull us this way and that, when we're not engrossed, how is that? What is that? What is it to be free of this tyranny of like and dislike? You know, I think we actually I was having a conversation with my in-laws about, you know, it was sort of a question of, you know, do you have to like Zazen? And then it became, well, why do we keep doing Zazen? Because at the beginning, it's hard and it's not comfortable and it's like a mess. Why do we stay with it? And so I've been, I've wondered about that and thought about that. And my theory, but kind of I think from my experience, is that right from the beginning, we're touching our wholeness. Letting go, when we start to let go, when we learn that we can let go and return, well, what are we returning to? Uchiyama Roshi says we let go of a thought and we sit down on the ground of reality. I love that line. We sit down in our wholeness. And so right from the beginning, it may be so brief that we don't notice. But maybe we feel that. Right? We've experienced that, even in the briefest way. Dada Roshi used to say over and over again, each one of us is perfect and complete, lacking nothing. In my mind, I've been using, I relate more to wholeness. I used to say that over and over again. I used to say, trust yourself, over and over again. Certainly to me, over and over again. Seemed like every Dokusan, that's all kind of all he said. Oh, just trust yourself. And I feel like that has been practice, learning to trust myself. And in sitting slowly, starting to find some wholeness, experience wholeness. Learning to trust the truth of that in myself. I don't understand this wholeness, but more and more I trust it. I know it. I see how there are ways in which I can seem to hold myself outside of it. And I'm learning how to kind of relax back into it. And how it's not dependent on anything. It's not dependent on my sense of myself, on my Dharma understanding, how I view myself. And it exists alongside of that, or it's not opposed, I don't know how to say it, but that pool of insecurity that's in my belly, that's there too. It doesn't affect it. It doesn't have to be eliminated or pushed away. You know, I've been thinking a lot about Daido. I know a lot of you didn't know him, but you've probably heard some things about him. And I've been thinking, you know, in working on this talk, I was thinking about his insecurity and defensiveness and just wondering about whether he worked with that or how he worked with that. And how when we work with the things that are uncomfortable in ourselves and we can work with them or seem to be working with them or try to work with them in a way that's really just part of this tyranny again. It's just, well, I don't want to feel that or I don't, you know, need to get rid of that. And it's kind of just the same like-dislike, push-pull. Things do change with practice. We stop creating, or we stop creating so much. We stop giving power to things. I guess what I was trying to say with the home fry story is that, you know, we can see that the thing outside doesn't have power over us. It's what we give to it. And so we don't have to give so much power. We can make that choice. We can learn to make that choice. And then we have to do that. Keep doing that continually. Not water those things that are not helpful. And tend to the things that are more helpful. And that, you know, I was thinking about just the, you know, the different practices that we do. And again, these are particularly visible in Sesshin. So doing work practice and to, you know, it's like, so in work practice, there's an invitation to enter, to come closer. And so we're vacuuming a room. I remember vacuuming a room a long time ago. And, you know, it's like the vacuum and the rug. It's just like saying, come on, look, come closer, be here with me. And how we're saying, oh, I'm doing a really good job of this. I bet nobody's ever been so thorough vacuuming the dorm before. Or, I'm really not very good at this. We're kind of saying, no thanks, I'll stay out here and like and dislike. This is more familiar. With liturgy, the liturgy is inviting us in. Come closer. Come into the wholeness. And we get caught in, oh, I did it wrong, or I'm doing a really good job. And that holds us outside. The invitation is always open to come closer. Hearing recently about the pain that a Dharma teacher had caused, I sort of had a very, in my mind, it's just, I need to take care of my own mind. Just had this, that was my response, take care of my mind. And so I've been sort of carrying that line, take care of your mind, of your own mind. Take care of your view, of your karma, your mind, your habits. And we can do this gently. Judy Leaf was here last week, and in her talk on Sunday, she talked about making friends with ourselves. Make friends with your mind, even with the tyrant in your mind. To hold the insecurity of not feeling whole, and don't give it so much power. Practice doing that. Don't let it be a tyrant, but see it for what it really is. I was feeling, once again, the feelings that I get when I'm going to be giving a talk, particularly during Sesshin. And some of it is just like sloshing around down here, and some of it comes up as thought, and I've become familiar with, it's always the same thoughts. You say the same thing every time. Who are you to be sitting up there? It's really not very profound. And sometimes it's just like sloshing around. And I've learned to just not listen so much. Not give it so much, kind of not believe it so much. So I was picturing a little tyrant, a petty tyrant, like a little yapping dog in the corner. You know, you can just ignore it sometimes. It's just a little dog, it's not really going to bite you, it's not going to hurt you. Sometimes you might want to try being nice to it, offer it some kindness, maybe that will make it settle down. Sometimes you just tell it to be quiet, hush up, to take care of our mind. Each time that we touch wholeness, our wholeness, each time we give less energy to that tyrant, we shift things a bit. Things do change. And we can settle more into trusting wholeness a little bit more. I think that part of the challenge of that, of settling into that, is that it's not exciting. It's not as exciting. We don't get anything, right? It would seem like with all this work, we would get something. We don't get something, I don't think. And it doesn't make us more or less. So we have a lot of Sesshin left. Let's use this time to look closely, to be with ourselves closely, and take care take care of our mind.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.